This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
This episode was recorded for my UK column show. Please keep us independent by going to support.ukcolumn.org.
This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
So you are like a wealth of knowledge. I think that sometimes all that knowledge just gets the better of you, doesn't it?
I don't know. Sometimes if you mean do I speak too much and in bad undiplomatic moments that gets me in trouble? I guess
no.
So.
No, I mean, are you boring at a party?
Oh, depends on the party, I guess. I try to have something to say at the water cooler.
Do you think aliens exist?
I think that there's a lot we don't know in this big, beautiful universe of ours that probably I would be surprised to find out that life has not emerged in other solar systems and possibly even cognitive life and possibly self-aware life maybe has emerged in different parts of our universe. There's billions of galaxies and each galaxy has billions of suns, and most of those suns have planets, and God knows, you know. But I think that at this point, everything that we have been told about how to think about aliens is horseshit, for lack of a better word. And I'm sorry for the language for your younger audience members out there. I think we're being lied to pretty heavily about the story of ETs as far as how it's being promoted by our congressional investigations, the hearings on ET disclosure from the government and Hollywood films and most documentaries and books that we've been fed over the past 70 years, really since the opening of the Cold War. I think it's garbage. One of the problems that we have faced is that we have allowed, since the murder of John F. Kennedy, we've allowed for a death cult that's committed to reducing world population levels down to something much more so-called manageable, maybe less than a billion or so. We've permitted that ideology to come in a big way into our Western society, which formerly enjoyed a belief in technological and scientific progress and a general faith that we could, and it was natural, to make life better for ourselves and our children and grandchildren by leaving something better behind, by building big projects that were magnificent, you know, things like the New Deal projects, the John F. Kennedy projects for electrification, building big infrastructure and having goals for the future. That also involved, as John F. Kennedy had pointed out, a mandate to go to the stars and to go beyond the horizons of the unknown and always expand human economic influence into the universe more broadly, which was a big driving force that made him a lot of enemies. And that after he died, you know, there was a systematic attack on all of those things that pushed us, that was allowing us to make creative leaps outside of the limits of our existence, specifically the space program, as well as his investments and programs into nuclear power, fusion propulsion, which was an offshoot of the fusion energy programs that JFK had endorsed. All of these things were cut down by this Malthusian takeover of the U.S. establishments, as well as Europe more broadly, and the Commonwealth, and what we saw is just the incapacitation of our ability to physically move beyond the limits of the earth. And as we did this to ourselves, we fell into the trap and we started adapting to limits. We became more imperial. And now we're like 50, 60 years into this insanity. And all that we have is an idea of what space is no longer optimistic. It's all based on that's the place where you go to get killed by aliens. That's the abyss where nobody can hear you scream. And all of these CIA-funded Hollywood films have been shaping our collective dream, our collective psyche and zeitgeist about what is space typically is a bad thing, a scary thing. And it's I think, done a lot of damage to create an environment mentally whereby a lot of narratives have been seeded that showcase nefarious or benevolent alien beings have been actually colluding with our governments for many, many decades and other things that are becoming more mainstream, taught in universities and promoted even on mainstream science magazines and documentaries that are being pummeled into our face on top of the acceleration of, you know, Hollywood films that are also feeding into the same idea of, well, you know, maybe at the end of the day, JFK was killed because he was trying to reveal the truth about aliens. And that's why the CIA had to kill him, because he was a security threat. And now is the time for the big reveal where our new alien overseers or gods who have been watching over us in the distance will now make, they're going to come out of the closet in a big disclosure operation. So that's sort of, I think, driving people nuts.
So the UFO disclosure is a psychological operation, is what you're saying. Why?
I think that there's multiple levels of intention or effect that are all part of... There's multiple effects that are the outcomes of this operation that all play a role that we shouldn't try to get into the idea of, like, why is it this or is it this or is it this? Like, is it to create a distraction while we're looking away from, let's say, a reorganization of the world in a manner that might restore some form of techno-feudalism or destructions of the lives of many people who otherwise could be saved if we were paying more attention, including our own? Yeah, I think part of it is a distraction. I think, is it the question of, is it to create a new control mechanism for a new set of religions or a new revamping, rebranding of religions that might, let's say, desire or might involve the overthrow of the conventional Abrahamic faiths in favor of a new revision of the sort of institutions, traditional institutions that have held sway for the past 2,000 years around a new idea of gods, in this case, ET gods, that might take the form of angels, where angels and demons once played a certain role in our psyche as being the supernatural influences. Now maybe it'll be the aliens that are disembodied entities in some cases and some in other cases. And that's that. So I think that there is an effort to create a new world religion accommodated for different peoples, different psyches of different cultural groups around the world who will be shown perhaps using holograms. You know, we have things like Project Bluebeam and other operations that have been revealed over the last 30 or 40 years that have been pretty well developed, which can create persuasive imagery in the skies that a physical object that is actually a hologram is being seen, whether it takes the form of, you know, holograms of Jesus in the clouds that they've shown over the skies of Brazil and other South American countries. Maybe it'll have a little bit of that twist for a slightly more...
This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Catholic audience, maybe it'll have a slightly more secular imagery for Asian audiences that are a bit more Confucian in their mindset, who might see just images of cities over the skies of China, as has been projected a couple of years back, just to give people a sense that maybe there are these other dimensions. And maybe for societies that are much more atheistic and, shaped by Steven Spielberg movies, it might take the form of flying saucers and tic-tac objects in the skies that might be shown to us, while at the same time our governments are working to present admissions of having worked with these aliens that perhaps crash landed in Roswell and other places in New Mexico, usually around military bases, over 70 years ago, and that we've been colluding with, receiving information from about how to build technology, maybe reverse engineering their spacecraft. So a lot of things like that, I think, are being told. So I think that there's multiple reasons why this sort of thing happens. Also, I'd say possibly, you could say maybe to also psych out Russia and China to other enemies of the United States, who might be told, hey, it's not us launching attacks against you. This is me speculating, right? It's not us in the West. It's not the U.S. military industrial complex launching an attack on you. It must be these aliens who are launching the attack on you. It's not us. It's them. So maybe there's an element of that, too. You know, I could think of a number of reasons why this might be put forth.
How far back does this psyop go?
I think it goes in the form that it's taken in our current society. I think that the psyop goes back to the earliest days of the Cold War, when you had certain sightings over Washington that were made by a pilot who saw certain things that nobody else saw, but he saw them and he reported them. And this happened about 2 weeks before Roswell. You know, something happened when something crashed in Roswell, New Mexico, near a military base. And you had, again, a report put forth that this was a flying saucer, a flying disc of some sort. Now, in the documentary series that I've done with my wife, Cynthia, we've done 4 episodes of The Hidden Hand Behind UFOs, where we go through the history and the evolution of this narrative. And we sort of pull apart these different stories. Is there actual evidence behind the idea that there was some sort of a flying saucer that landed, that crash landed in 1947 in June? There is evidence that something experimental did crash. But as we make the point, it probably had more to do with the ongoing secret science program that had been maintained even after World War II, that took the form originally of the Manhattan Project, and that continued on under a new form after World War II. Though we were told the Manhattan Project was ended, it was never ended. It simply metastasized like a hydra and took on a variety of different new forms, one of which being the Battle of the Mind, MK Ultra, that grew out of the former Manhattan Project, the secret science program that developed LSD, DMT, a lot of the psilocybins, and then started infusing that into the population as a whole, especially targeting the young baby boomers who had been born after 1945. But also another aspect was, you had weather modification programs also being developed using the same infrastructure of the Manhattan Project. And another one involved a lot of the hidden tech, the development of aerospace technologies by the Nazis and the Italians, that had an advanced flying saucer program using alternative pathways to building flying machines that didn't involve a lot of the conventional technologies that we had been accustomed to in the West, specifically the works of Schauberger, Victor Schauberger, the Horton brothers, and others that had been absorbed into Project Paperclip and into the U.S. program. Is it possible that some of those early aircraft did crash as they were doing tests? Yeah, I think that's a possible theory. But the point is, early on, Alan Dulles and a number of social psychologists who were tied to Tavistock, the British Psychological Warfare Bureau, basically, that still is very influential in the whole gender realignment theories of the plaguing our Western society today. They were very active in shaping MKUltra and shaping U.S. intelligence. And Ellen Dulles was directly interfacing with many of these psychiatrists, one psychologist as well, who was playing a very big role in the crafting, the weaponization of the new legends around UFOs and UFO gods, was Carl Jung, who was an OSS operative who directly was interfacing and advising Ellen Dulles and wrote a book on flying saucers, a modern myth, as a manual for psychological warfare against the population as a whole. So these were things already early on in the 1940s that were already being used to replace the former enemy of Nazism with a new enemy as an organizational principle to accommodate also our fear of the Russians and the Chinese and the commies. There was this already being baked into the psyche as a lever of control. And then new stories, new myths were cooked in over many generations. And it usually involves an occult network that is tied to a certain Rosicrucian satanic agency that's also been baked into the U.S. governing intelligence establishment that's been maintaining this thing as well. So that's something we also touch upon throughout our four episodes that we've made public so far.
What's interesting about this whole alien narrative is that it's definitely a societal vulnerability because it's unknown. And whenever something's unknown, it's very easy to feed fear into that. And humans have been thinking about this for thousands of years. So it seems like a great way to kind of control.
Yes, it does. And it's... Well, I think that the unknown is always a place where the oligarchy enjoys playing in that realm beyond the borderlands of knowledge. That's actually one of the early theosophical journals. And the Theosophists play a very big role, an organization that was hatched in the 1875 period by Madame Blavatsky, which had a number of major high-level occultists. I think it's really the scientific... And or the religious engineering institute that of the British Empire that was created in order to capture the not just the minds but really the souls of society after the U.S. Civil War, again 1875, and the magazine, they had two magazines. One was officially called Lucifer Publishing. Basically, it was designed to usher in the age of Aquarius, the age of Lucifer, the light bringer, as a new age for mankind. That's the origins of a lot of the modern new age that has contaminated almost every aspect of our culture in different ways in our society, both as far as shaping the mystical occult undertones of the right.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
That influence or that manifested itself in a certain way with National Socialistic organization in the 20s and 30s, as well as the left Bolshevik radical. The radical left was also being influenced very much by these theosophical networks. So they got all controlled sides of this dialectic over the last, 150 years under their influence. And that's a whole show unto itself. But the other thing on top of Lucifer was Borderlands. And part of the idea was, again, like organizing their methods in order to control the liminal field, that zone right between the conscious and subconscious, that little domain right before you wake up. And there's that fuzzy, am I dreaming or am I awake moment? That's very serious for religious engineers. That's their domain where they swim in, because that's the gateway or the gatekeepers who control that. The shamans, right, the storytellers that control the collective dream, those are the positions where they can give meaning to the symbols that we are fed and that influence our subconscious. That was a big thing that influenced Carl Jung's entire purpose in life, which was devoted to reviving Gnosticism as a replacement for the conventional Christian, you know, foundations of society, which he was very open about in his own writings throughout his entire life, was overthrowing Christianity and restoring a more Luciferian idea of Christ as a Bacchanalian figure and a worshiping of hedonism as the new happiness. So, and I go through that in episode 3 of our documentary series. But yeah, the questions of like, well, what are these supernatural entities, these imps, these elves that different cultures have in their folklore? You know, there's different folk tales in throughout all of Europe, in the Black Forest and Bohemia and everywhere, of different creatures that will occasionally come and steal your children, that will make your wife disappear in the middle of the night, that do rituals in the forests. And there have been, I think that part of what these stories are the effects of, are the very real existence of a very tightly organized and yet loosely expressed movement of black magic, of witch covens, of warlocks, of things that have been maintained continuously since the days of ancient Rome. Even before Christianity emerged, there were these institutions of black magic that, you know, will take on different clothes at different times, but always have a common mandate that requires certain very evil rituals to be done. Some of which involve human sacrifice, some, you know, involve very bad things to children. And I think that a lot of more primitive peoples centuries ago didn't know how to describe these scary things and gave them labels. Like, again, pixies and fairies and elves and other things, which have they're not as cute as they've been rebranded in our 20th century. There's some scary stories of what these things were. And I think that the oligarchy enjoys coloring how we perceive these supernatural things on the offskirts or outskirts of known society and the consciousness. And I think that that's also a big thing that's being done in the UFO rebranding thing today, is that there's a big push for acknowledging, and again, this is using the narrative both of Carl Jung, but also of Jacques Vallée and J. Allen Hynek, the advisor to Steven Spielberg, as well as somebody who was very influential in George Lucas's development. These were two gentlemen who have been playing a big role in crafting the UFO disclosure movement, and both of them have put forth back in the 1960s this idea that aliens are actually interdimensional. They're not from our dimension, they're from other dimensions, and they could bounce in and out. Why they need technology like flying saucers to do that, I don't really know, but they're basically saying that they're beings that have been with us since the start of humankind, that they probably created humankind, that they're mostly nefarious. War of the Worlds is another one, yeah, that H.G. Wells put forth. And I mean, a lot of this also follows the program of, yeah, H.G. Wells, the leading eugenicist Fabian Society leader, who put forth a whole program of how to organize society around a fear of, the unknown, of extraterrestrials coming in to attack us. And all of his films, and or his books that became films, largely push on the same moral of the story, which is to nudge human beings towards this notion that unless we organize ourselves around one world government, we won't be able to protect ourselves from these entities. And it's because we don't have one world government and organization that we suffer from these entities. And his nonfiction books also showcase, I think, the same mandate, where all of his work on the New World Order, his work on the world brain, the open conspiracy, all informed the work of Jacques Vallée and others, you know, decades later, and continue to exert influence on the techno-feudal reset that's being pushed and gamed out right now by a lot of theosophically minded Silicon Valley billionaires who believe in a new drug-driven religion, because they also have a certain type of set of rituals that they want us to adopt to accept this new world religion that they're preparing, which involves doing a lot of sacred drugs, whether it's of the DMT, the psilocybin variety. And you'll find that the same institutions that were funding and organizing the UFO stories since 1947 were also simultaneously the same agencies funding the development and application and promotion of drugs, specifically of the psilocybin variety and also LSD, to help us tap into and experience these angelic beings more directly. And that involves Terrence McKenna and many others who are receiving the same funding from Lawrence Rockefeller, the same Lawrence Rockefeller that was bankrolling Stephen Greer and, you know, Robert Bigelow and Linda Moulton Howe. That's the same
Greer.
Robert Bigelow.
Isn't he doing the rounds?
Yeah, he's been doing the rounds for a while. Yeah, he emerged out of the Human Potential Foundation program that was an offshoot of Esalen, which had received a massive amount of support and patronage by Lawrence Rockefeller. He was part of Lawrence Rockefeller's famous ranch meeting in 1993, where the new acceleration of the disclosure operation was put into motion with the emergence of Bill Clinton and Hillary into the White House, who immediately started meeting with Lawrence Rockefeller. People could see pictures of that. And Stephen Greer was given a certain mandate to play his role in shaping the psyche of the masses around this notion. What his particular narrative was, that the aliens are good, benevolent beings that we could interface with through mass meditation groups, usually in the forests. So basically set up a network of global cults that would do very theosophical things like, you know, collective vibrations and putting out good energy to receive or call forth, invoke the emergence of our alien saviors. Other figures like David Icke were also developed and deployed around that same time to play another narrative in that dialectic. Of course, David Icke was pushing the notion that the alien overlords were actually evil lizard people sucking our fear energy. But ultimately, the prescription of how to deal with the either good or evil alien entities from another dimension lording over us is the same thing. Try to feel good, put out good vibes, try to avoid feeling bad. That's how to help your enemies, is by feeling bad. So try to feel good. And like the idea of feelings became the way everybody wants to feel good. Nobody wants to feel bad. So that kind of appeals to add a revolutionary spin to that is a great way to hypnotize and pacify a big chunk of the population that could otherwise be doing something much more useful with their time as far as identifying the actual death cult satanic oligarchy that wants to kill us. Instead of doing that, we find ourselves absorbed, you know, in meditation groups, trying to, you know, yeah, again, just positive, make this thing just disappear through positive vibes, which is not good.
One of the things that you have researched is the link between the CIA and Tom DeLonge. I don't want to accept it.
Oh, you're a Blink 182 fan?
Yes. They were a great band. They were a fantastic pop punk band in the 90s and early 2000s. And I don't want to. I don't want to accept that Tom was an intelligence mouthpiece.
Yeah, Tom DeLonge, eh? You know, it's. He should have just stuck with what he was good at. It was a surprising one to see his To the Stars Academy, which, you know, when you hear him speaking about the formation of this thing, it's kind of weird because you could see that he doesn't fully understand how he's being used or how he was being used. I don't know if they still are using him as they were a few years ago. I think maybe he's clearly a pawn. He's clearly not a thinker, but he thinks he's a thinker. And that's what makes it kind of sad, because he makes the point that he, on all of his road trips with his band, he would spend all of his time reading UFO books and UFO magazines and preparing himself. And he thought he describes how he was so special. It was revealed to him when members from the highest echelons of the U.S. intelligence and military agencies and people from Lockheed Martin and the CIA began to contact him, because they knew that I was special, that I figured things out on my own that nobody was supposed to figure out. And so they recruited me to be a part of the new, you know, dispensation to prepare using creativity and to organize comic books and music videos and other things, the psyche of the youth in order to be receptive to what would be the big reveal in a few years. And he's like, because I'm so special. And poor guy, like, he really thinks he's super smart and has no idea how he's being laughed at by people who clearly just want to use him, because his ego does seem to be quite large. And thus he can't self-examine how something else might be going on that he doesn't understand. But yeah, he was selected to create this thing called the To the Stars Academy in, I think, in 2016 or 17. And one of the key figures who I think is the real force behind it was Harold Puthoff, who's the co-founder of this thing. And Puthoff gets us, I think, to something a little bit more at the causal nexus of this whole operation, because he's the guy who was part of the Lawrence Rockefeller, Robert Bigelow National Institute for Discovery Science that emerged in 1993 out of that meeting at the Rockefeller Ranch I was talking about. And he was also one of the key figures behind Project Stargate in the early 70s from the get-go. And he was a high-level, I think, seventh degree operating thetan. So he's an operating thetan seven level.
Matt, is Project Stargate the same Stargate that Trump has been promoting?
I think so. I think they won't admit to a direct continuity, but let me tell you, I mean, yes, it's the same thing. They say that the original Stargate ended in 1997 or 1998, and now this Stargate is a new Stargate. No, I think when you look at the operating system, the paradigm, what's shaping the current Stargate, and you compare it to the entire MO of the original Stargate, including many of the players, I think it's the same thing.
It's all surveillance.
It never really went away. It's all surveillance. And it's done with a mystical twist. Like, the original Stargate actually had as its mandate as... So it's a remote viewing project, for those who don't know. I think it was an outgrowth of MKUltra, after MKUltra sort of no longer was able to maintain its character after 1974, 75, when a lot of the nefarious operations of what the CIA was doing to human guinea pigs was made public. It took on a few different expressions in the 70s, one of which I think was the Stanford Research Institute's. So it's the Stanford Research Institute, which is behind the original Stargate. The SRI, as they call it, was directly being managed by a network of high priests at Esalen, an organization set up by followers of Aldous Huxley in Big Sur, California in 1961. And basically the idea was to use a lot of theosophical meditation techniques, psychotropic drugs, trauma-based mind control to organize clairvoyance. Super soldiers was the idea. A lot of it focused on children, because children are more malleable, more easy to break, more inclined to compartmentalize if you can get them young enough. As Bertrand Russell said, get the kid before they're 10. You can control the man later on. That's basically the Jesuit method. So they did a lot of damage to millions and millions of human guinea pigs. One of the aspects of it involved a CIA operative whose name is escaping me all of a sudden, who had visions when he was given an envelope of like and told to use his clairvoyant remote viewing powers to see what's inside the envelope. He had visions of Mars and with pyramids and big tall beings and obelisks, and inside the envelope, what he was describing was actually, it said Mars 1 million years ago was, and that was supposedly proof that became also a Hollywood movie a decade later, which is a very good Hollywood movie, very well done, called Stargate, that we have been seeded, that our planet has been accessed by these gates, these stargates from other beings that created, you know, Egyptian society and human society more broadly, and that we can maybe access or tap into using special, highly powered super soldiers that have Jedi mind powers and can learn to cruise the astral planes. A big part of what Harold Puthoff, I mean, the fact that he was a high level Scientologist along with Ingo Swann, and there's a number of followers of a figure who was self-proclaimed Antichrist. That's L. Ron Hubbard. Called himself the Antichrist. He was a follower of Aleister Crowley. He was doing radical Babylon working sex magic rituals to usher in the Antichrist with Jack Parsons in deserts of Mexico, or is it Arizona? Anyway.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Plus, get free home delivery on most beds with Bass. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store today.
That was absolutely what L. Ron Hubbard was doing before he created his new UFO religion. And a lot of these initiates who would go through the degrees of initiation to rise very high found themselves over the years playing very big roles within the U.S. security intelligence apparatus, not the least of which was Harold Puthoff. So the fact that you have these guys dealing with, again, something that you see with Stargate as being a surveillance operation, but also that involves things like Oracle AI. And the very notion of the Oracle isn't just simply a technology innovation or a company that's tied to Larry Ellison as a purely tech company. The Oracle concept itself is a direct symbol of the ancient oracles that controlled the world under a high priesthood in ancient Roman, ancient Greek, ancient Etruscan periods, everybody had to pay homage. If you were a king or a general, you had to pay homage to the high priests of the Oracle at Delphi, the Pythian Oracle of Apollo, you know, that had different sibyls around the world, in Libya, in Egypt, all over Rome. And these were the control mechanisms that would tell kings and generals to go to war, to make peace, or to allow, to sanction a new cult, or to abolish an existent movement, let's say the Christians, that had to be destroyed under the mandate of the high priest that would interpret what the Oracle was doing. So this is sort of the foundation of the necromancers that would be special people, specially endowed, going back to the ancient times all the way throughout the next 2,000 years of our human history. Mediums who would channel the dead, who would channel demons or other beings that also have contaminated many Christian movements today, who, you know, many Christians might have experienced weird people, like people talking in tongues and channeling the Holy Spirit in a weird way that's kind of freaky. Or, you know, we've got channelers who are brought up to channel in collective prayers Archangel Michael, who wanted to tell the congregations what to think and what to feel as a channeler. All of this stuff is different aspects of the same type of control mechanism that I think they've been reviving with Project Stargate now, but now with levers fully under a centralized command of a new Silicon Valley transhumanist high priesthood that is tied to the UFOs.
Yeah, so what's interesting here is that you're talking about how the whole UFO narrative is more effective when it's centralized. And so that was part of a strategy a long time ago, which suggests to me, Matt, that MKUltra is still very much alive.
I think so. I mean, it's not called that anymore. Like I said, I think it metastasized, but I believe that it didn't go away. And I think that a lot of there's something that began to really happen after 1972, right, as the Vietnam War was petering out, is you had a mass expansion of cults, whether Jonestown, Sun Myung-moon, you know, and the Moonies, different offshoots of the Ordo Templi Orientis, the Solar Lodge, which was carrying out mass atrocities on children, different offshoots of the Manson family as well, which didn't go away. What you'll find it, or the Process Church of Final Judgment as a satanic Luciferian, a satanic cult, you know, that originated as a spinoff from the Scientologists in the early 60s. And that had big influence in New York and California and the Hollywood crowd. A lot of these things didn't go away. They just continued to manage and create more different cults with different flavors all over the United States, especially, but also in Canada and Europe. And I think that a lot of that, when you start scratching on the surface of these cults, you start seeing the influence of intelligence agencies behind the scenes managing, protecting, and grooming them, and occasionally eliminating them, as in the case of the Jim Jones story. when they're no longer useful, or let's say people start looking into them from Congress a little bit too much, and you know what's going on behind the surface appearance that involves also narco trafficking, as well as just you know using human beings, little social groups as laboratories to see what you can do and get away with on a scaled up level. And I think that's one of the aspects of the usefulness of these cults is they're little laboratories, partially incubators, to see what can people adapt to in a small scale that could then be scaled up to national levels or entire human social groups on a much, much broader scale of millions or billions of people. So I think that's another aspect of what they do and what MKUltra was morphed into from the 70s onward.
But I mean, you've got this multi-pronged approach, which, as you pointed out, seems to be quite pervasive in the Five Eyes. But even, you know, China has Falun Gong, which believes in aliens.
That's right. Yeah, most people don't know that, but that's very true. And yeah, Li Hongji is himself a self-professed intergalactic messiah who promotes and has been open about this, though they won't let him speak publicly as much now as they used to. In 1999, there's a famous Time magazine interview where Li Hongji talks about how his particular role in protecting humanity and keeping the forces in balance between the good and the evil alien super beings, that only he is capable of keeping the balance, and that he also professes to have the Stargate powers of astral projection, of all omniscience, where he could see everything by projecting his astral body anywhere he wants it to go. And he can read the minds of his followers in his cults. He can project, levitate, heal them from afar just by thinking about them. And it creates a psychological control grid in the minds of people who really, really get initiated into what seems to be something that is kind of like an Asian version of Scientology, that does seem to have like a nice opening appearance to welcome in anybody into a meditation group doing very nice Qigong exercises. And before you know it, if you've got a certain psychological profile and an ambition, a thirst, you might find yourself invited to be challenged to the next degree of knowledge about what's actually causing your depression, your other issues, just like they do in Scientology. Of course, again, it's calibrated for a slightly more Asian psych profile, but it attracts many Westerners as well, as we all know. And before you know it, at certain points, we discover, or initiates discover along the way, that the cause of their problems is actually foreign alien entities that are living inside of them that they can only shed by virtue of doing this specific type of meditation exercise innovated by Master Li Hongji. And nobody else has touched into the source of shedding these foreign entities the way he has, or the way L. Ron Hubbard had, using his more technologically, and basically it's a lie detector test where you just hold on to two different, you know, electrode probes that can then, you know, be influenced by your emotional tones that help you understand how you have been infested by these foreign alien entities from another galaxy, you know, launched into the Earth area by Xenu, this ancient overlord, evil Gnostic alien that is causing all of your problems. And once you've fully shed and you've gone through your degrees of initiation, now you can self-actualize and realize that you are God. It's very Thelemic in that sense. You can make your own reality.
However, it might be in China, but the same players are behind the scenes. I mean, you have the NED, who's one of the big financial backers of Falun Gong.
It's so interesting. Well, that's what I'm saying, right? And the NED is a front for the CIA. So anywhere you look at these cults, you will find intelligence agencies. China, however, has done just a much better job than we have at identifying this technique and expelling as much as they can. It's been quite incredible to see their performance in preventatively stopping these agencies from taking on deeper roots into the Chinese world. They were kicked out very early on, and Master Li Hongji was forced to, you know, to basically leave China. But where did he go? He went to New York, where he was granted a 430-acre estate in the state of New York. It's a luxury estate where it's a major compound, highly secretive, and where a massive brainwashing operation is organized, again, under the protection of the CIA. in order to continue asymmetrical warfare, cultural warfare against the Chinese, especially focusing on trying to brainwash and influence the minds of young Chinese expatriates who live abroad in Europe, in England, in Australia, in Canada, the USA. And they put a lot of effort into trying to create as many Chinese people who believe that what Master Li Hongji says, because he is he's essentially a co-equivalent in many ways to God. It's a very pagan thing. And so if he says, you know, the Chinese government are run by evil aliens, that's part of his narrative that he tells to his followers. And you can see his transcripts of his teachings on his website, that his view is that the Chinese are actually the physical manifestation, the weapon used by the evil species of aliens that want to suckle on the vital fluids, the organs of the tasty Falun Gong, specifically because through doing his meditation exercises, our organs evolve into more golden section proportions. And that's what the evil aliens love sucking on and using. And yet the USA, which is where he is, well, we also in the USA, he says, have alien overlords, but they're more benevolent. They're less evil. And so we're working with them. And so that's the type of weird cosmology that even the Scientologists also promote at the end of the day. Not that different. And again, China's just done a much better job at nipping that in the butt.
Yes. And then you have, you know, a politician like Harry Reid, who took, as you pointed out, $22 million from taxpayers into quote unquote UFO research. So what then was UFO research?
Well, yeah, and that was the Advanced Aerospace Identification Program that from as a subdepartment within the Pentagon that Harry Reid, as Speaker of the House, had approved, as you pointed out, the creation of. And I think that's the thing, you know, like Harry Reid was a patron of Robert Bigelow. He also received a lot of money from Robert Bigelow, one of the figures who has been at the forefront of the new space movement. The new space movement was something concocted to promote the idea that we could get rid of NASA ultimately as an outdated, you know, nationalistic entity and replace the idea of space research with basically Silicon Valley billionaires. So we'll have Jeff Bezos and Branson and Elon Musk as being the, and Robert Bigelow was a real estate billionaire, a real estate magnate. Who just has they have a lot of money, and they will be the ones who now control the science, the R&D, and the application of said R&D into new tech that would then get contracts from governments of the world in order to do the space program stuff that NASA used to do, that the U.S. government nationally used to be responsible for. So we'll get rid of the nation state, we'll have these things. And Robert Bigelow he was also the patron of, he advanced the parapsychology operations to try to like monetize arguments that could be made for scientifically investigating, reincarnation or how the soul imprints itself into an ether. And then we can investigate how that works so that we can maybe talk to dead people and channel the dead through new technology. So he's part of that whole operation, which he was simultaneously promoting as part of his bankrolling of the Advanced Aerospace Identification Program that David Grush and Luis Elizondo, by the way, is a counter-terrorism operative as well, who was known as one of the most brutal torturers of Guantanamo Bay. You know, and Luis Elizondo, his whole family comes back to being assets. His father was a Cuban mercenary who was part of the CIA operation to overthrow Castro, and that JFK had quashed back in the 60s. So, you know, you've got these individuals, and again, he was, I think there was even a story where there was a couple of European governments that had even had a warrant out for his arrest for the abuses, the criminal abuses he carried out in Guantanamo Bay. And now all of a sudden this guy is working with, you know, Tom DeLonge and Hal Puthoff and company in promoting UFO disclosure. I don't buy any of that. I think it's all tied to the giant psyop. It's all ugly.
What role do other intelligence agencies play, like Mossad and MI6, and even on Russia's side?
It's more difficult for me to see. I'm not seeing as much on the Russian side, though I'm sure there are nefarious actors, clearly. I mean, the Russian psyche is very susceptible to the belief in ETs and ET gods. There's a deep mysticism, although it doesn't take the same form as it does in a U.S. audience base. There, sometimes it has a bit more, it's more integrated with an Orthodox Christian worldview that also allows for an alien aspect to the narrative. But you do have a problem there, and I'm sure that it wouldn't be possible to have that level of popularity for ETs and theosophical thinking if it weren't being protected by certain agencies with influence within Russian intelligence, but I don't know what they are. MI6, definitely. I mean, that was early on, even after Project Blue Book, or during the time of Project Blue Book, you had Lord Louis Mountbatten, who was interfacing directly with British intelligence at creating the Flying Saucer Working Party back in 1949, 50, 51, that organized, really, I think, that was the first officially recognized national investigation of flying saucers that had as its mandate the brainwashing of military intelligence officers first and foremost. So it's a multi-phased operation. Before you could generally get to the population, you had to get to the military intelligence serve as the protection, the first, major protection, the guardians of a society. So you have to first destroy the minds and discernment faculties of military intelligence patriots. So that was the first wave of what brought the Project Blue Book, as well as the Flying Saucer Working Party, overseen also by Sir Henry Tizard, who was a major player in creating the Manhattan Project. He was the top scientist who controlled the British Empire's science policy back before and during World War II. And afterwards, he immediately went to work as his new assignment of overseeing the UFO psyop under the influence of Lord Mountbatten, which I go through in episode 3 of the Hidden Hand Behind UFO series. And yeah, MI6, you'll find them kind of everywhere, behind, the growth of crop circles. MI6 has played a role in introducing the crop circle mythos, which all of a sudden, it's like there was no crop circles by and large for millennia. And then all of a sudden in 1971, you start seeing crop circles in England first, and then quick, and usually near military bases, but in England specifically, in cornfields and wheat fields, and then all of a sudden in the United States. But nobody else is reporting these things elsewhere in Asia and Africa and South America and Russia. Like, nobody's reporting these things except England first and then the USA. It's just like these crash sites. They always happen around American military bases or British military bases, but nowhere else in the world do we seem to have reports of these things, which is like conspicuous. So yeah, no, I think there's a collusion. I mean, Hal Puthoff was also very high up in the NSA as well as the CIA, the NSA being the American branch of the Five Eyes. So it's difficult to discern because there's so much overlap with many of these intelligence agencies. So I tend not to get into the weeds too much on that front. I try to just focus on what I can definitely wrap my mind around, and some of the stuff in the back rooms I don't know how to think about some of the details.
The thing that always makes me laugh though, Matt, is, and this is a bit of a segue, but it's always crash sites. I mean, these aliens are supposedly so advanced, right? But they come here and they crash.
Well, on the crash landing thing, it is hilarious. Just quickly on the landing thing, that is, the people really need to sit on that. I think that the paradox is so thick, and we often just brush it away too easily. But it's like, if we're being told that that such a culture so advanced that can produce technologies that allow the flight of these beings from other star systems or other galaxies that must necessitate moving beyond the speed of light, That's advanced technology. That's a very advanced culture that can produce that. Or inversely, bouncing in and out of galaxies. If you've got a technology that can allow you to jump from one dimension into another, interdimensionally, that means that it's very hard to believe that they don't know how to avoid crashing into windmills and like sand dunes once they arrive on the Earth. And it's not just the one case of Roswell that's the singular case of an alien supposedly that's crashed. They have dozens and dozens. I think back in 2003 or something, the CIA admitted somehow that in 2023, the CIA admitted that since 2003, something like 9 other UFOs have crashed. This is the CIA openly coming out saying this, that 9 have crashed between 2003 to 2023 over 20 years alone. Like the absurdity that they just can't fly without crashing, though they're so advanced. It blows my mind that people still buy this and don't laugh at it more readily. Because it is, it's a friggin' joke. It's really bad. Or adversely, that humans, F-16 jets can fight these things.
Do you think the Apollo missions were part of the PSYOP?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, the choice of naming them the Apollo missions already has a certain, you know, occult. There's a certain occult undertone. As I mentioned, the Oracle of Apollo at Delphi was one of the dominant oracles that controlled the ancient world. The Oracle concept being a very big part also of the AI, the artificial intelligence cult that's also been incubated to converge on the UFO narrative as two sides of the same thing. That's clearly being pushed by the same operatives as well to be part of a new religion where people are starting to think that the AI is actually the embodiment of a formerly disembodied entity, some Luciferian antichrist concept or whatever that Peter Thiel has been even promoting, that is now finding physical expression, that when we're talking to the AI, maybe we're not talking to a large language model at all. Maybe we're not talking to that. Maybe we're actually talking to demons that are helping us compose our stories or our music or whatever. So that's what younger people are being fed. And you can only imagine what young people who don't have this knowledge and are being fed all of these stories will think when they're 40, when they're 50, when they're 60, after having more and more layers of this being just reconfirmed as part of thinking that maybe they're dealing with alien demons expressing themselves through this AI robotics sort of thing, which can only thus replace us if we don't integrate with it, maybe through brain chips and other things. Remind me of your specific question, because that was a weird segue that was supposed to answer a specific question that you just had.
No, I was just asking if you thought the Apollo missions were part of the UFO PSYOP.
Right. Yeah, that was my weird, I fell off into my speculation there. I'm open to that possibility. I think that JFK had a much more noble idea of what the U.S. space program could do and what it was capable of to help humanity transcend out of this Manichaean Cold War ethos of mutual assured destruction, which I think was wonderful. Also, many of those players tied to Robert Bigelow and Hal Puthoff and Lawrence Rockefeller, just to say, as people will find in my documentaries, especially episode 3 and 4, played a direct role in killing JFK and covering up his murder and creating new stories after he died about what his murder was all about. A huge amount of these figures are tied to that assassination operation. I think that what it became after he died was likely... did seem to be very influenced by many occult agencies that probably did sabotage it from the get-go. Whether or not the actual story we've been told about the moon landings was real or not, I think we've been lied to quite a bit about those things, especially the first moon landing, that I've seen enough persuasive evidence that I don't think that was actually a real thing. Maybe the other moon landings might have been real. We'll find out. Apparently, you know, China and Russia have a pretty big commitment to industrialize the moon and set up space bases. And Putin has made the point that one of the first priorities that they're going to have when they get there is they're going to go to the original landing site of the Armstrong Buzz Aldrin landing site. And they're going to just confirm whether there actually are footprints there and a flag there or not. I'm curious to see what they come up with. We won't have long to wait barring World War III getting in the way. So we'll see. But probably. I think his enemies probably took control of the levers of NASA and ran it into the ground on top of destroying it from the outside and from within at the same time.
Area 51 is a gold mine. I mean, what role does it play in UFO disclosure?
Well, it's part of the ongoing Manhattan Project operation that was, I think, testing out a lot of those technologies acquired by the Germans after World War II. A lot of aviation tech was cultivated there in secret during the Cold War. The Cold War it provided a good excuse of justified secrecy in science. And so it was very convenient. And with, again, as we were talking about earlier, that mystique, the unknown, became fertile soil to create creative narratives to tell people what they were seeing, especially people living around Roswell or living around the Area 51 air base or these other experimental the Wright-Patterson air base. There would foreseeably be civilians who would occasionally at night see things flying that they couldn't understand. I have personally also seen things flying at night that I couldn't understand that had, trajectories that defied being simply a satellite, that had like a 45 degree change in orientation at night, moving very quickly. Was it a drone? I mean, this is where a lot of the experimental drones were developed decades before they were the public technology was unveiled in the early 90s. Decades before that, it had already been developed quite a bit in these air bases. What were people seeing, right? So either the CIA and the U.S. government could admit that there was the secret science program, or they could create stories that could, you know, satisfy the empirical information that people were seeing or that unvetted Air Force officers were seeing when they were flying their planes and they were looking out a window and they would see something strange flying. Was it an advanced drone being developed, or was it an alien tech? And if they didn't have security clearance to understand what it was, they would simply land, they would debrief their superior, and they would be told to shut up. You know, you're not allowed to talk about it. Well, that type of atmosphere creates a lot of speculation. And then you can increasingly incubate, you know, using that technique over years and years, more paranoid members within military intelligence who really do get into the X-Files mentality. And they really do start making an identity or shaping their identity around the fact that they're special because they've seen something that might be almost spiritual in nature. Because if aliens have been here and they're so advanced that they can arrive here and have been here for thousands or millions of years, maybe they seeded and created humanity. Maybe that is our God, right? It does satisfy this spiritual hole that we all have to try to know why we are. What is the purpose of life? What happens after death? And this kind of satisfies that spiritual vacuum. And so it becomes a big organizational principle in the identities of people who then play into, like, you know, the conspiracy, because it's so big, it's so magnificent, it's so important, it's more important than anything, that they would even justify doing a lot of evil in order to advance this great good that they think is a part of this their mission in life. So that's, I think, part of how the brainwashing happens and has been going on for a very long time.
But then how do you discern between the PSYOP and real disclosure?
Well, I think that's a great question. Your questions are very simple and good. I like that. I think that it requires, a certain responsibility to not be sloppy with our thinking and to try to know as much as is knowable to a thinking mind capable of using God-given reason without skipping steps. And people often want the easy answer to things to avoid doing mind work because it's hard and it makes them tired, or they lack confidence in themselves. So they'd rather AI tell them what to think about a topic instead of doing the work, you know, themselves to think something through. And it becomes a bit of a Pygmalion effect where we gain a false hubris when we get addicted to right answers without knowing what the proper question was. we start getting used to using lazy reason, which is a type of false. It's lazy reason is basically just jumping to conclusions before you appreciate the nuance of a topic you're trying to understand. And so you want to have the satisfaction of the aha, I know the answer. But it's like you didn't earn that answer. You didn't investigate properly the full spectrum of data in front of you. You just jumped to something easy. So I think to the degree that we do that, we are always going to be susceptible to lies. And the way to inoculate yourself from lies and the lying liars who tell those lies is to earn knowledge that internally, like we subjectively learn, make discoveries that we can build upon of the objective external reality that exists independent of us. But we can, you know, when we make real discoveries, the subjective and the objective kind of like integrate in those special ways that creates an internal standard, a moral and intellectual standard that we can then use as a litmus or to measure fallacious arguments against. And for those arguments that were presented, which conform to the discoveries we've already made, we can take them more seriously and treat them with respect. You know, and then for those that fail the test, we can call bullshit and move forward. And just, I think a lot of people are mistrained. They've adapted to an unnatural educational and cultural society, you know, or a weaponized cultural and educational environment that groomed us and that shaped bad behavior and bad habits. And so we're more susceptible than we should be if we were the best part of ourselves. So that's what I would say, is just think for yourself and don't let AI think for you. People could go to either my Substack, which is matthewarrett.substack.com. I put out things mostly for free every day. Our videos that I've done with my wife and our collaborators, Jason Dahl and David Goslin, who are two fantastic filmmaking colleagues. Most of those films are freely and readily available. Yeah, they don't have paywalls right now. We've made them all free, including our UFO series, which is on CanadianPatriot.org. Also our books on the Revenge of the Mystery Cults trilogy and my wife's books and my Clash of the Two Americas series. All of those books are available on the CanadianPatriot.org. You could find buy the books all over the place. And finally, RisingTideFoundation.net is a more educational, cultural platform I created and run with my wife, and we host seminars and conferences and lectures on a weekly basis there. So you can check those things out.